The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. You know you can hear a wide variety of news and voices all day through the week. That continues during the weekend. Programs like Latino USA and On the Media offer perspectives on our country that you may not hear anywhere else. To find a list of all of our weekend news programs, go to KUAF.com. Ahead on today's show, as the flu season continues to keep people from work and school, we'll get an update on free flu shots being offered by the Arkansas Department of Health. And we also get a jump start on Valentine's Day. Comics Dina Blizzard and Pat Hazel give us a preview of their relationship-themed comedy they'll perform twice tonight at Walton Arts Center. And Timothy Dennis talks with three of the four musicians preparing a Valentine's Day concert at Ozark Folkways in Winslow next week. Some funny, some sweet, ahead on today's show. First, a new report that came out this month and was commissioned by the Walton Family Foundation shows Northwest Arkansas's downtowns are growing, which comes with increased demand for residential and commercial development. The data also reaffirms the need for additional affordable housing options in both Benton and Washington counties. The University of Arkansas Faye Jones School of Architecture and Design is playing a role in brainstorming ways to meet that need as part of its Housing Northwest Arkansas initiative. The initiative is funded by a $250,000 grant from the Walton Foundation. Part of the project was an affordable housing symposium held this past weekend in Bentonville and Fayetteville. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek was there, and she has this report.
Let's start with what the housing market and transportation in Northwest Arkansas look like right now. Here's Stephen Luoni, the director of the University of Arkansas Community Design Center, and Sean Donovan, the former Secretary of Housing and Urban Development under President Obama.
Northwest Arkansas is the most unequal metro area in Arkansas. The top 1% make 33 times more than the bottom 99%. The national average is 25 times. So we're a third above that and rising.
Your average family spends about 26% of their income on housing. That's actually better than most places. But the average family in this region spends 29% of their income on transportation. Remarkable. More than 50% higher than the average in the United States.
We're growing at the rate of 12,000 people annually, which means we'll require 8,000 new units over the next 3 years, and we're only building 1,000 units. So we're radically undersupplied, even at the level of the market rate housing. In the rental market, we'll need close, over the next 3 years, in the rental market, we'll need close to 5,000 units. Currently, 1,500 are under construction.
So while Northwest Arkansas and the state in general still have a reputation for affordability, the statistics mentioned by speakers at the symposium point to real problems in the region. The income inequality skews the housing market in favor of upper middle and high earners, leaving large supply gaps in lower to middle class housing. And while the average Northwest Arkansas family spends less on housing, the amount it spends on transportation is 10% higher than the national average. Together, those two costs add up to more than half of a family's income. Finally, there's just not enough housing to go around. Here's Stephen Luoni again.
The vacancy rate in Northwest Arkansas for housing is 0.39%, and in downtowns currently it's effectively 0%. There's simply no supply available. A healthy vacancy rate for a region for a housing market is around 6 to 7%.
As many speakers noted, they weren't at the symposium to necessarily offer solutions, as what works in one community may not work in another. But they were there to offer ideas. And luckily, they said, Northwest Arkansas is still in a position to tackle its problems before they get out of hand. Here's Sean Donovan.
I've seen across this country, and in fact, across the world, that as cities flourish, there are downsides that if you don't pay attention to them, they can actually undermine the very success that has led to the growth of your communities, of your cities, of your towns.
Donovan used California as a cautionary tale. A recent study showed the state lost about 3 points of its gross domestic product because it doesn't have the range of housing necessary for the range of workers critical to the economy of California's communities. In places like Silicon Valley, the average worker can't afford to live where they work. So, Donovan says, many commute as much as 2 hours one way.
The fundamental job of a successful region that cares about an issue like this is to figure out how to leverage the very success that is creating pressure in order to create the resources for affordable housing.
Symposium speakers agreed creating and keeping affordable housing means ramping up construction in creative ways that involve partnerships with local governments, nonprofits, foundations, and businesses. Lisa Sturtevant is a consultant and a senior fellow with the Urban Land Institute.
One of the biggest challenges to ensuring that there's housing affordable to people of modest incomes is that the gap, right, between the cost of building housing and the revenue generated by providing that housing at lower rents or prices often is difficult to meet.
Sturtevant gave several examples of how partnerships can overcome that challenge. One was in Arlington County, Virginia, where county leaders wanted to redevelop a community center.
They saw the potential to do something more than just rebuild the community center. They said, what if we increase the density? What if we change the zoning? What if we found a partner? And then we could build housing as part of the entire redevelopment effort.
So Sturtevant says they entered into a partnership with a nonprofit developer. The county provided the land for significantly below market rate, and the nonprofit was able to build more than 120 units for low-income families, including 13 units of permanent supportive housing for those transitioning out of homelessness. Another partnership Sturtevant highlighted is in Fairfax, Virginia. It involved the local Economic Development Authority, George Mason University, and the state.
George Mason was increasingly having trouble attracting faculty and staff and even graduate students to its campus because of the high cost of housing in the Northern Virginia suburbs.
But Sturtevant says the university had access to land, so they decided to build rental housing on campus. Enter Masonvale, which has more than 150 units. Sturtevant also talked about inclusionary zoning, like the mandatory policy in Montgomery County, Maryland, that's been in place since the 70s. Every new housing development in that area has to provide a percentage of units that are affordable to households earning between 60 and 80% of the area median income.
And these types of policies are very attractive to communities where, like Northwest Arkansas, where there's a run-up in home prices and there's a real concern about folks of more modest incomes having the availability to access that new housing.
That kind of policy, though, would have to be codified in a local zoning ordinance. The common thread through all of Sturtevant's examples was the affordability of land, something Garner Stoll, the director of development services for the city of Fayetteville, also talked about. Stoll moved to the area last year from Austin, where he was the assistant director of neighborhood planning and zoning. Austin, he says, is a city where housing and transportation costs have regularly exceeded incomes. Stoll, too, had recommendations for our region.
I think make public land available for housing is number one. You can do it with a great deal of precision. You can do it with a great deal of fairness. And you can make the attainable housing long range. The affordability can be many, many years.
Stoll says public land could mean vacant surface parking lots in old school buildings and airports, but it could also mean redeveloping fire stations or libraries to include housing. But he adds part of turning that creativity into reality will mean working on regulatory reform.
And if it's not being built, we need to ask the question, why isn't it being built, and propose alternatives and be bold.
Stoll also suggested raising public funding, an idea that was also brought up by Sean Donovan, who says some communities, like New York City, set aside a portion of their property taxes.
We had a surcharge, essentially, on property taxes, or a piece of the existing property tax that was dedicated to affordable housing.
Several speakers also brought up the need for smaller housing projects, the so-called missing middle housing. Here's Stephen Luoni with the U of A Community Design Center.
This is a class of architecture, a class of multifamily walk-up housing types that we're all familiar with, townhouses, courtyard housing, bungalow houses, mansion apartment, duplexes, fourplexes.
Leone says the problem is developers haven't built that kind of housing since the 1940s because of obstacles posed by city regulations and financing, which is how many regions ended up with either single-family home developments or large-scale apartment complexes. And as John Anderson, who is an architect and co-founder of the Incremental Development Alliance, pointed out, those missing middle projects will have to be taken up by local developers because major developers likely won't be interested in them.
So when we say incremental development, what are we talking about? That's anything from the pop-up tent selling the tamales that you and your abuela made to the little rehab one-story building, two-story, maybe three, probably no elevator, often rehab. These are often the missing teeth.
Anderson says incremental development is also what ends up creating wealth in a community. Tied into these conversations about housing, there were also conversations about transportation. To recap, stats show Northwest Arkansans are spending more of their incomes on transportation than on housing. And as the economy shifts from one based on industry to one based on information, former HUD Secretary Sean Donovan says we're also reaching the bounds of the automobile geography.
We're really beginning to reach the limits of that. And in many places, frankly, we've gone well beyond those limits.
Just like finding ways to tackle housing issues, Donovan says cities are getting creative and moving away from looking at public transportation in the form of buses and trains.
We've got cities experimenting across the country with micro transit. The very same technology that has made Uber and Lyft, incredibly valuable companies, allows us to rethink transit in the way that we've traditionally thought about it. I would encourage you to really get creative and look around the country and even around the world at some of the more interesting sort of new forms of transit that are coming together.
And while Donovan could give examples of communities that are not doing so well on the housing and transportation front, it was hard for him to find an example of a place that's doing everything right.
To be frank, I've never seen the perfect community. there's no one city, I would say. Now that's the place you got to go and look at.
Northwest Arkansas may or may not become that place, but at least we have a lot of ideas to work with. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Zuzana Sitek.
Other players in this conversation are University of Arkansas students studying at the Faye Jones School of Architecture and Design. The grant from the Walton Family Foundation also funds a studio course focusing on affordable housing. There are 25 students, and they've been at it for the last 3 weeks. Jeannie Blair Luft is one of them. She's in her fourth and final year of studying interior design.
This is not what I thought I'd be doing at all. When people think of interior design, they think of you're picking out colors and pillows and stuff like that. That is not what we do at all here. It's more on like how you can modulate light and how you can bring the closest proximities to things and how you can really change how people act and live and breathe in a space.
Right now, the students are working in groups on four theoretical sites in Bentonville. Blair Luft is designing her project on a piece of land off Southeast 3rd Street that's right on the Razorback Greenway and near downtown. Other sites are near Crystal Bridges, the future site of the Thaden School, and the future site of the Momentary. Blair Luft says part of the project involves understanding what makes Bentonville the way it is.
One thing that surprised me is that for Walmart, the Silicon Valley is where all their tech people are, and that there's like a direct flight from San Francisco to Bentonville, which is we're going to be going to San Francisco to look at the housing types. But just the impact that sort of these companies can have on a town and a city and the people that live there, and especially how it connects to the rest of the world.
Blair Luft says she's working with two architecture students on her affordable housing design. And while they're just getting to the design phase, Blair Luft spoke a bit about how she envisions the space.
Obviously, lots of light, lots of windows. We're on a beautiful site that's surrounded by trees, and we have a park right next to us, and then we're two blocks away from the downtown square. So having some visual connection between those, whether it's in the light or the openness or even the way that how many people you can fit in one space and the way that how people live there directly translates to what's located around them.
The third portion of the Housing Northwest Arkansas Initiative is a competition. In March, the Faye Jones School will request bids for architecture firms to design a mixed-use, attainable housing development in Bentonville.
Michael Korda doodled pictures of his cats for his wife when she fell ill.
It's not possible to write a funny book about death, but it is possible to write a book about death that in some way pays tribute to the living and to life, even if it's through cats.
Catnip, his book of doodles, and the latest political news Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Tomorrow morning from 7 to 9 on 91.3.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Additional support comes from Highlands Oncology Group, helping patients fight the battle every day with a team of cancer specialists in both Benton and Washington counties. Services include American College of Radiology certified imaging departments, infusion centers, pharmacy, clinical trials, and more. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com. The Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra welcomes violinist Er-Gene Kong Saturday, February 17th at the Arend Arts Center in Bentonville. Under the direction of Maestro Stephen Bias, Kong and the APO will perform Violin Concerto No. 2 of Arkansas composer Florence Beatrice Price. ArkansasPhilharmonic.org for tickets.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. The flu continues to thrive in Arkansas. The Arkansas Department of Health reports at least 125 deaths in the state this season because of influenza. The health department is offering free flu shots at all local health units. Marisha DiCarlo, spokesperson for the health department, says that means people statewide have access to shots.
We have 92 health units, and they're in every county in the state. And so we're encouraging people that if they haven't gotten their flu shot yet, it's not too late. You can go to any of our local health units, and you can receive the flu shot for free. And so what that means is that there's no out-of-pocket cost for patients regardless of your insurance status. So if you have insurance, we may ask for your insurance card, but there will be no copay. So if your insurance typically charges a copay, we will not be charging that to you.
Benton, Washington, Franklin, and Sebastian counties are among those with the most confirmed cases of flu in Arkansas. DiCarlo says the department encourages people to get flu shots since this year appears to be the deadliest flu season in Arkansas since at least 2000.
We know that this is a really challenging flu season this year. We are saddened by the fact that we have already had 125 flu-related deaths. Three of those deaths have been among children. And so we are taking the flu very seriously. We want people to know that even in years where the flu shot isn't perfect, it's still the best protection from the flu that we have. And so that's why we're encouraging people to get it if they haven't yet, and that they can get it for free at our local health unit.
Hours for all health units across the state are 8 a.m. until 4:30 p.m., and locations can be found at healthy.arkansas.gov/health-units. Flu symptoms include fever, chills, cough, sore throat, muscle or body aches, fatigue, and headache. Medical professionals say people diagnosed with the flu should stay home until they have gone 24 hours without a fever, and that's without the aid of fever-reducing medicine. Drivers in downtown Bentonville are getting used to detour signs, and work scheduled to start Monday will present a few more. The city will replace a water main from South Main and 2nd to South Main and 4th. Northbound and southbound traffic of the affected streets will be rerouted to Southwest A Street. The city plans to do a block-by-block installation and closure process. The work will upgrade water lines and add fire hydrants. The project is expected to be finished by April 4th. But that completion date could be affected by weather. A proposal to improve schools in Fort Smith is moving along. Talk Business and Politics reports a citizens committee last night voted to approve the plan and send it to the Fort Smith School Board, a plan that includes a new career and technology center, renovations at Darby Junior High, and expansion of three elementary schools. The nearly $120 million plan would mean an increase of 6.888 mills in the district. Now the school board will decide the exact proposal to put in front of voters later this year. Colder temperatures are forecast for the region this weekend, but the latest forecast from the National Weather Service does not include much chance of nasty precipitation. The forecast does offer a slight chance of freezing drizzle in northwest Arkansas tonight and tomorrow night. Lows tonight in northwest Arkansas are expected around 30, around 42 for the Arkansas River Valley tonight. Lows tomorrow night should range from 20 to 28 degrees throughout the KUAF listening area. And singer-songwriter Joe Crookston is returning to Fayetteville this month.
My baby girl was born in 1943.
Fayetteville Public Library announced the singer-songwriter will perform Friday the 16th at the library. Doors will open at 6. Music begins in the Walker Community Room at 7. His album, Abel, Baker, Charlie, and Dog, was named the Album of the Year by the Folk Alliance International, and he has appeared at previous editions of the Fayetteville Roots Festival.
Leaving Virginia in the South Pacific beneath the blistering sun.
It's Friday, February 9th, 2018. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
And Kyle just said to me, February is usually my least favorite month.
Mine, yes.
Yes. You know why?
Do I know why it's my least favorite?
Yes.
It's usually gray and cold and baseball hasn't started yet.
I was going to guess because you're male and it's Valentine's
month. It has nothing to do with that. Okay. I like Valentine's.
Okay.
But no, it has nothing to do with that.
Well, I'm going to try to help our listeners.
All right.
Because, you know, I take it as a personal mission every year to try to keep them from messing up on Valentine's
Day. Yes, you do.
Three theater choices. And, you know, that's my first choice for a gift.
Yeah.
The Humans continues at Theater Squared through February 18th.
And let me stop you there and remind people that the playwright will be at Fayetteville Public Library for moderated discussion with Sean Gold, who is the director, Bob Ford, the artistic director of T2, and myself. Valentine's night, yes, the 14th at 6. But then when you're done with this conversation, you can go spend the rest of the night somewhere else.
And we have a Q&A with Stephen Karam in today's SUP page.
There you go.
The Producers is on at Arkansas Public Theater in Rogers, and it's at 8. Today and tomorrow, two on Sunday, and again the next two weekends. And American in Paris is on at the Walton Arts Center. That ought to be a great date play.
It's a wonderful dance. Wonderful dance.
Frothy musical thing. And it happens at 8 today, 2 and 8 tomorrow, and 2 on Sunday. Kids need Valentine's too, right?
Sure.
So take the kids to Super Saturday at the Fayetteville Public Library at 10:30. Brian and Terry Kinder are there with Kinder songs.
They've been on the show a couple of years ago, and they're fantastic.
And then it's Mardi Gras Parade in Fayetteville.
Yes.
At 2 o'clock. Starts downtown, goes north on Block Avenue to Dixon Street. Saturday night, the Art Infusion Annual Black Hearts Ball. I think they'll let you in even if you're a couple.
Oh, Black Hearts, because it's like if you're not attached.
It's the alternative Valentine's
Day
celebration at Crystal Bridges from 8 to 11. It's $45, but they have jazz and blues and soul and the Serotones, who are big NPR Tiny Desk concert.
People.
Thank you. Yeah, yes. They're people. You can call 657-2335 to register for that. And then the Little Foxes opens Thursday at Fort Smith Little Theater. And then on the 16th, The Hunchback of Notre Dame at the Berry Performing Arts Center at JBU.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the makeup looks great. They sent me a photo of the kid playing Quasimodo getting his makeup done. And then also in Fort Smith at, I guess it's called the Ave or the Ave. Do you know about this? It's on Towson Avenue. They're doing stand-up comedy called I'm Sorry, I Forgot Valentine's.
Not because it's not your fault, Becca.
I'm trying hard, and that's on Friday at 7:30 and 9. Next Saturday, the 17th.
A week from tomorrow.
Asleep at the Wheel.
At the Odd.
At the Odd in Eureka Springs, 7:30. Tickets start at $20.
Yeah.
And a one-night haunted house for Valentine's Day to see if the monsters find love.
Okay.
It's called the Expelled Haunted House. They do it every Halloween, but they're doing a one night only for Valentine's Day from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. It's at 29555 Highway 23 in Huntsville. It's $15, and you can find them on Facebook to find out more.
And what's the one night only?
It is Saturday the 17th.
Okay, very good. Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
That's saxophonist Donnie McCaslin in the background. And I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday here on KUAF. I'll feature an exclusive interview with Donnie McCaslin. He'll be performing this weekend at Walton Arts Center. He'll talk about working on David Bowie's last recording, Black Star, and what will be in store for audiences this weekend when he performs. Shades of Jazz, right here on KUAF.
As Becca reminds us, Wednesday is Valentine's Day, and in just a few minutes, a few songs appropriate for the holiday, but not the same old, same old. Musicians including Emily Cates take their own approach to songs of love next week at a Valentine's Night concert at Ozark Folkways in Winslow, and they'll be with Timothy Dennis in the Furman Garner Performance Studio just ahead. Before that, conversation for Valentine's Day and relationships and family. Tonight, the Comics' Pat Hazel and Dina Blizzard will perform their show, Happy Valentine's Day, at Walton Arts Center. Hazel was once head writer for Seinfeld on NBC, is a veteran of shows like The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, and chief creative officer for Sweetwood Productions in Austin. Blizzard is a stand-up comic and has a seriously funny presence on social media. They stopped by the Carver Center for Public Radio yesterday afternoon, and here's a bit of our conversation. It began just as soon as Dina and Pat sat down.
We have no act.
When you come to show, it's just us berating each other.
Well, my guess is you don't really need an act. See, this is one of those things when I'm in the audience and I see entertainers like you, I think there is no script. I think there is no outline because you seem so natural.
Yeah, no, I know, but it is confirmed. Yeah, there is not.
It is this.
You just get on stage and...
Kind of. We start that way. We always introduce ourselves with no plan.
You should have heard us on the plane today, though, because we're talking to each other like this. And, you know, everybody else on the plane is normally quiet, and we're not really married to each other. So I just yell at him, and people are like, what is wrong with these two? Right. They should not be together. And I'm like, exactly.
Or she goes in the restaurant, and I come in last night. I already sat your wife. I go, I don't think she'd like it if you said this. Like, no, she's lovely. Like, I go, no, we're not really. You know, I was like, why separate rooms? So, we're two traveling comedians. She already has a husband and kids and so forth. Yeah. So it doesn't work out as well for me to hang around that situation. But yes, this is
basically, hit the stage.
We hit the stage together. We introduce ourselves. We welcome people, but we don't really have a plan there. And then Dina spends some time getting to know the audience individually. I come out, she introduces me, I do a little bit of that, but our favorite thing, which it all builds up to, is that we have, prior to the show, we've put index cards in the lobby, and they may anonymously write questions about anything that has to do with romance, courtship, life, anything at all. And once you say anonymous, it sort of opens the floodgates.
It's one of the subjects that we all can relate to if you're, say, 16, 15 and over, right? We've all had either good, bad, current, past relationships.
And it's interestingly, for as simple as a relationship seems, it's all so complicated. Communication is complicated. Expectations are complicated. So I think that's where the questions come from. And it amuses me that they've run out of people to talk to about that they would randomly give two comedians
I should ask these two what I should do with my relationship. Well, I think the nice thing about this show, though, is, you know, coming from comedy, there are many more male voices in comedy than there are female voices. And so, you know, Pat will go up and kind of talk about his experiences and his divorce and my experience. Not really at divorce yet, but hoping. And and I think that so many people, it's such a universal thing. I think marriage and keeping that alive is one of the things that people will say. You got it last night, was what is the secret to like a good marriage? I think that one probably comes up.
People, everyone's looking.
We don't have the answer, but they keep asking.
Yeah, I mean, not to be inelegant, but you have described yourself as you thought you were a catch and you were a catch and release.
I did.
So does anyone ever, I don't know, say, hey, why are you telling me?
Of course they do. Oh. I say it, and certainly she says it about me. About every answer I have, that's why he's divorced. But I don't know that I have the real answer. I just know that I've now been through sort of the tingly stage of dating, young, being married and having kids and being a parent. And I really haven't dated so much now as a divorced person, but also the social part of it and the matchmaking, but it's all so complicated.
And I don't think that people actually want the answers. I think that what makes it interesting is that you are getting the average Joe perspective, right? This is how you start to see
why
that.
Why do you wave your hand over me,
Joe? Look at the whole outfit. It's the whole thing, average Joe, right? And I think that they're
fixer-upper.
I'm the average woman, right? And so I think that it's not about getting the answers, but about seeing somebody just like you up on a stage, but being able to find the funny in these scenarios that drive us all crazy. But, you know, I'm going to say that's totally you on
stage. You are so far above average.
What is more intimidating? Actually doing comedy, either in front of someone or for someone, writing for someone, or parenthood?
Oh, parenthood is so much more. I'm going to tell you a story. I thought about doing stand-up for years. I was 22 when I first thought of it, and then I had a bunch of kids, got my master's, the whole thing, and sometime around 30, I had had two kids, but my son was at the mall with me, and he started having, like, a full-on breakdown.
A tantrum, just full-on tantrum.
And I thought about doing stand-up, but the idea of being funny on purpose was just too much for me, and I didn't want to be embarrassed the whole nine. And it takes a lot to embarrass me. So we're at the mall. My son has a complete breakdown, and he's about 2 years old, and I do everything. I bribe him. I threaten him. I do everything, and nothing is working. And finally, I'm so embarrassed. I have no idea what to do. So I went, and I hid in the china department behind some dishes, right? And as I'm sitting there behind the dishes, I'm thinking to myself, oh my gosh, I know they can see me on the camera, totally hiding right now. This is the most embarrassed I have ever been in my entire life. And in that moment, I thought to myself, stand-up can't be this hard. This is so much harder than anything I've ever done. And I was like, and that moment is when I decided I'm going to do stand-up. And then, as I'm having this whole moment, all of a sudden, he had stopped crying. And now he's like a lost kid. So now all these people are coming around. Hey, where's your mom? Now, I can't pop up from behind the Lennox, or I'm a horrible mother.
Right.
So now
I had to
crawl through to the linen department and come around. Like, I was like, oh, there you are. Like, I didn't know where he was the whole time. I'm an awful mother. But that was my moment.
Yeah, just a shorter version.
Okay.
There was no china involved.
Okay.
But I think that it is like cliff diving. Stand up when you first do it. You have to do it. You have to jump off the cliff. If you don't, you're not a cliff diver, right? So that is a very scary moment. But when you find your voice in comedy, when, you know, Dina finds her audience or her way, I approach things very nostalgically. I'm always talking about growing up and so forth. She has a mothering perspective, a wine drinking perspective, whatever it is, right? When you find your voice, it's very easy to express yourself. As a parent, you don't know what you're saying, if it's true or if it's the right answer or if they're going to respond. And I hear myself saying things like when they were little, please don't use bacon as a bookmark, like things you would never say.
Yeah.
Get that yogurt out of your underwear, whatever it is. And you're like, what is making me say this stuff? Yeah. And I think it's frustrating because anytime you get an age where you think you got them, they get a little older and they got a new game plan. You know, it's like negotiating with a terrorist at that point.
Pat Hazel and Dina Blizzard will be on stage twice tonight with the show Happy Valentine's Day at Walton Arts Center. The Late Show begins at 9:30 tonight. She is a stand-up comic and board game creator. You can follow her on Twitter. Her handle is @OneFunnyMother. He is a former head writer for Seinfeld, a creator of plays, and a stand-up comic as well. He's currently working on a musical. And you can find out more about tonight's shows at waltonartscenter.org.
Local support for 91.3 comes from Arcom Plus, providing digital and offset printing, graphic design and promotional items, and a variety of business services for jobs of all sizes. Located just off College Avenue at 461 East Township in Fayetteville, Arcom has been locally owned and operated for over 25 years. Printing NWA.com or 444-7711 for more. The annual Fayetteville Mardi Gras Parade is this Saturday, February 10th, beginning at 2 p.m. on the downtown square, then continuing down Dixon Street. This family-friendly event will feature floats, walkers, costumes, and Mardi Gras beads. All participants and volunteers should register at FayettevilleMardiGras.com.
There are plenty of love songs out there, from soft and sweet ballads to irreverent pieces, more likely to make you laugh than make you long for another. A concert taking place Wednesday, Valentine's Day, at Ozark Folkways in Winslow aims to offer the entire gamut. The Valentine's Day concert, love songs of and for all types, will feature Susan Shore and Michael Cockrum, as well as Emily Cates and Drew Pierce. Earlier this week, Susan, Michael, and Emily came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio to talk with Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis and to give us a preview of that Valentine's Day concert.
You're my bright-eyed dancer. came late to the floor. I've been waiting for so long when you walk through the door. You tipped me off balance, Southern boy surprise, with your New Jersey cadence and mischief in your eyes. Hey, Susan, when the band plays, your liquid I'm as stiff as clay. If you hold me, I will take a chance. You're the only girl I ever met that makes me want to dance. Make little tender boxes, old souls in vivid rooms, paste together joy and grief in the parody of gloom. You're a strong cup of coffee, you're a lively morning bird. You know you drive me crazy in the best sense of the word. Hey, Susan, when the band plays, your liquid I'm as stiff as clay. If you hold me, I will take a chance. You're the only girl I ever met that makes me want to dance. Curled up in the night, comparing scars and shooting stars until the morning light. And we still have this dance floor and a portion of our youth. I'm just glad to grow old with you to tell you the truth. Hey, Susan, when the band plays, your liquid I'm as stiff as clay. You know I love you, so I'll take a chance. You're the only girl I've met that makes me wanna dance. The only girl I ever met likes the way I dance.
That was wonderful.
Aww.
That was really great. What was the title of that song?
It's called Dancer.
Is that one of your originals?
Yes.
That's fantastic.
I wrote that for Susan.
I have to say, there's something really weird about singing a song and say, hey, Susan, it's like, I feel like just, like, I shouldn't be singing that, but better than some other name.
You're the only one that's available.
Well, obviously, this was a successful song for you in several ways, Michael, because you and Susan are married. Did you write this before you were married?
Yeah.
Wow.
I would call that a success.
Yeah, well, it's a great song, you know, and by gosh, it takes a great song sometimes to get the one you love.
That's right.
You are.
So all of y'all are playing this Valentine's concert at Ozark Folkways. What kind of love songs are you going to play there?
Oh, we're going to play... Well, I believe the title of the thing is Love Songs, the Good, the Bad, the Ridiculous. We're going to play not just, you know, really nice, sweet, or sappy love songs. We're going to play songs about love relationships that went bad or love relationships that are just unconventional or weird. So it's not... You can come to it if if you're in love with someone and you bring that person, but you can also come to it if you're bitter and divorced or just if you're happily single. And I know people in all of these
bring
categories.
Bring your ex. Bring
yeah,
your ex.
Hey, there's an idea. Bring your ex.
Yeah. I mean, Emily will sing some sweet, well, it's, I don't know if they call it sweet, but funny.
I got a couple of sweet ones. But and also the fourth person who's involved with this is my boyfriend, Drew Pierce, who sings and plays the banjo and lives in Cutter, Arkansas, which is 110 miles from here. We're sort of a weird couple. We've been together 18 years, but we live a distance apart, which is actually a good thing, you see. And one of the songs that I do is a song about long-distance relationships. But we'll do a few songs we didn't write as well, but a lot of all three of us here write songs, so we'll do a lot of originals, some of which people maybe have heard and some have, which I think that song that they just did, I maybe have only heard once, and it's a wonderful song.
We hope that everything will be so appropriate for all areas of relationships. That's what
I tried to find
about.
A good murder ballad, but I couldn't come up with one.
I've got some, like, most of my love songs are, like, about miserable, you know, like, experiences, so we'll only be doing maybe one of those, maybe. I don't know. We want everybody to be happy when they leave, though. Right,
right. There'll be a lot of variety.
It will
so.
Be. Yeah.
And I think the show starts at 7 p.m. I'm sure you can show up, you know, 6:30 or so. And I think it's $10 donation. And I think they're going to have stuff to...
Chocolate
and stuff to munch on and
champagne.
Drink.
It being so, Ozark Folkways, I'd imagine there's more stuff going on besides just the music.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, of course, they also have all their wonderful arts and craft items and stuff. I love that place. It's about 25 miles south of Fayetteville. Well worth the drive. Really neat place.
Why did y'all agree to do this event?
It was my idea. I wanted to do something fun on Valentine's Day, and I had been down there, and I knew they were starting to have music, so I talked to these guys, and we just kind of got in touch with them and floated the idea. A number of years ago, I was part of a Valentine's Day show that took place through Mike Shirky's shows that he used to do. Now his shows are called The Pick and Post. At the time, they were called, what were they called?
Good Folk.
Good Folk Productions. This was when his concerts were at a big old house on Block Street. And it was me and Donna and Kelly Mulholland of Still on the Hill and Jack Williams, and the four of us sort of did a songwriter in the round thing with love songs on Valentine's Day, and it was really successful. That had been a number of years ago, and I remember that fondly. But thought that it would be fun to do something with these guys.
And we've played music together before, right, so we were familiar with each other's stuff, and we get along, you know, really well. Mm-hmm. And so that seemed like a perfect fit for all of us.
Yeah. Well, would you mind playing another song for us?
Yes.
Do that one?
So getting into sort of a weird song, but it has to do with love and relationships. Many years ago, I came up with the idea of a duet for two women to sing, and the women are the wife and the girlfriend of the same two-timing guy, and it's a song they sing together. And I usually haven't been able to do this song because I haven't had someone with me who has been willing to play the other part. Susan has been nice enough to learn this part, so imagine that I am the wife and Susan is the girlfriend of the same two-timing guy. He's been working late an awful lot, complaining how his job demands of him. I guess I should be lonely, but I'm not. Sometimes it's nice to wash my hands of him. Besides, I know he really isn't there. It's plain to see he's having an affair. I know the what, just not the who or where. Would he be hurt to know that I don't care?
He says he doesn't love her anymore. In recent years, she's let her figure slide. She nags and argues till he's out the door. And then she sits there drinking gin and cries. Although he claims the marriage won't endure, when he's with me, he always speaks of her. And night in my dreams, something strange occurs.
I see her vividly, but he's a blur. Sometimes I wish he'd leave her for good, but then I change my mind. 'Cause if it wasn't for her, I'd have to put up with him all the time. The folks downtown whisper, "There goes his wife." And then they always wink and laugh a bit. They say, you know, he leads a double life. But they don't understand the half of it. That she's an ally to me, not a foe. Although she probably doesn't even know. 'Cause he's fine in doses, but to excess, no. I'm glad he's got some place else he can go. None of my girlfriends seem to understand. They scorn my love for its futility. But the appeal of a married man to me is unavailability. I can't deny that I hold his love dear. But he is so demanding when he's here. A weekend with him can seem like a year. He's someone I don't mind having to share. Sometimes I wish he'd leave her for good, but then I change my mind. 'Cause if it wasn't for her, I'd have to put up with him all the time. Sometimes I wish he'd leave her for good, but then I change my mind. 'Cause if it wasn't for her, I'd have to put up with him all the time.
That's great. That was really great.
It's called If It Wasn't For Her, you know, and I think Nashville, what with, you know, the Me Too movement and stuff like this, Nashville may be getting ready for a song like this.
Or some variation of it, anyway.
Yeah.
So earlier, y'all mentioned that you've played together quite a bit over the years.
Yeah.
When you decide to do a show like this, how much preparation do you have to do beforehand to get ready
Barely
for it?
Barely any at all.
As little as possible.
just so lazy.
All four of us got together one time, and as I mentioned, Drew was unable to come today, but we've done things together informally. We're all real good friends, and, you know, we've play together at parties, and actually years ago, before Susan even met Michael, she and I went to Texas and did a few shows together, and we've occasionally done something also around here. So I think music should be first and foremost fun, and second and foremost pretty good in, like, not forgetting a whole lot of words or something.
And this is relatively casual. I mean, it's pretty loosey-goosey. I mean, you know, maybe we'll get together a little bit more, like maybe one more time or something.
Could happen. Could happen.
But we don't want too much polish, because then, you know,
then we wouldn't sound like ourselves.
We wouldn't sound like ourselves, and besides, there'll be champagne, so who cares?
You know, exactly.
Like, really, if we're not perfect, well.
I have one final question I'd like to ask y'all before I ask you to play one last song. Uh-huh. What makes a good love song?
Love.
Oh, that's why I married
you. In a word.
Perfect. Oh.
Well, something that touches you in some way, and, you know, has a kind of a compelling lyrics and melody. And sometimes, I mean, when Michael was singing that song, Dancer, that first one they did, and I'd only heard it once before, I mean, my eyes almost started tearing up. I mean, it really touched me. I mean, that was, and, you know, that makes a really good song.
But there's so many aspects to it, too. So there's, you can go, I mean, it's not like there's only one kind of love song, you know, and so that it really widens, it sort of widens your possibilities, I think, of the kinds of stuff. So I think really, like any good song, you want to hit somebody on an emotional level. You know, otherwise it's journalism.
In terms of art, though, and music, I think that's that's it. So you really, sky's the limit.
Yeah. You know? Well, Guy Clark's, you know, Homegrown Tomatoes, he always said that was a love song.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I could see that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you all so much for coming in and talking and playing. Would you mind playing one more to close us out?
Sure.
Sure. Bemia, Mr. Shane. So this is a song that is some Yiddish lyrics, but not that many. The Andrews Sisters had a hit with this, I believe, in the 40s. I need to brush up on my music history here. But so it's Bemia, Mr. Shane. You ready, guys?
Mm-hmm.
Of all the boys I've known, and I've known some, until I first met you, I was lonesome. But then you came inside, my heart grew light, and this old world seemed new to me. You're really swell, I have to admit you deserve expressions that really fit you. So I racked my brain, hoping to explain all the things that you do to me. Bemil, Mr. Shane, please let me explain. Bemil, Mr. Shane means your brand. Bemil, Mr. Shane, again I'll explain. It means you're the fairest in the land. I could say Bella, Bella, even say Vandebar. Each language only helps me tell you how grand you are. I've tried to explain. Bemil, Mr. Shane, so kiss me and say you'll understand. Bemil, Mr. Shane, let me try to explain. Bemil, Mr. Shane. Such an old refrain, it means I am begging for your hand. I could say Bella, Bella, even say Wunderbar. Each language only helps me tell you how grand you are. Boys I've known, and I've known some, until I first met you I was lonesome. But then you came inside, my heart grew light, and this old world seemed new to me.
I tried to explain, I've been near best ashamed. So kiss me and say you'll understand. So kiss me and say you'll understand.
Susan Shore, Michael Cockrum, and Emily Cates speaking with Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio earlier this week. The Valentine's Day concert will take place Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. A $10 donation is suggested at the door. You can find out more at ozarkfolkways.org. The University of Arkansas softball season was supposed to start this weekend, but it won't. Inclement weather in Louisiana is canceling the season opening tournament for the Razorbacks. They were to play in the Lion Classic in Hammond, Louisiana. Now they will open the season next week in a tournament in Palm Springs, California. And the Arkansas women's basketball team will attempt to get a 13th win again on Sunday afternoon at Bud Walton Arena when the Razorbacks face Missouri. That game will tip off Sunday afternoon at 4. Last night, Arkansas lost to Tennessee 90-85. By the way, both John Brown University basketball teams lost at Mid-American Christian last night, both home tomorrow afternoon at Bill George Arena in Siloam Springs, and the University of Arkansas Fort Smith basketball teams at home tomorrow hosting St. Edward's University in an afternoon doubleheader. Those are the next to last home dates for UAFS for the regular season. A service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Springdale. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for spending part of your Friday with us. Back Sunday morning at 9 on 91.3 with Weekend Ozarks at Large. Have a great weekend.